Harihi Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahavirayankara Vavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So now what's been explained is the, how do you say, Vaishnava religion that's been contaminated with karma, means these mimamsakas and smartas and that, who, according to the Vedas, are interested in the upasana kanda, the Vedas. And so then they worship these different deities, and so Vishnu is one of the five deities. So they worship, but their purpose is, you know, for some mundane purpose or to gain something material. And their concept of Vishnu is also material. So it's not really considered a serious Vaishnavism. So then, yeah, so that's separate from someone who's just worshipping Krishna as the Supreme Lord and as a transcendental person, but for material means. So that's just would be a devotee who's, you know, how you say, is maybe their needs are very self-centered. So this would be like sakam. But here is actually, it's not technically really devotional service, because even though they're accepting that Vishnu is the top of the pile in this material workings of the world, Their purpose is that, well, because I've done the activity, then Vishnu has to give the results, just like all the other demigods. So it's like a mechanical, it's a machine. So then, if we look at that carefully, that puts us as the center, and us as the one who's actually moving everything. We may say, everything is by the grace of Vishnu, he's controlling everything, not a blade of grass moves without his sanction. But when I do a particular activity of karma, then he is obliged to get it done. It's working under his control, but when I do something, he is obliged that the result must come. So therefore we see is actually then it puts ourself at the center, because then what we do actually is in control. So technically then Vishnu is not really in control there. The free will, all these different things are not there. So then, now Vaishnava Das goes on to explain the religion contaminated by impersonalism. Vaishnava religion contaminated by impersonal philosophy is also prevalent in India. According to the impersonalists, in order to attain the qualityless impersonal Brahman, one should worship Surya, Ganesh, Shakti, Vishnu, or Shiva or Vishnu. Then when one attains perfect knowledge, he can discard the form that he had worshipped. Then at the end, he attains the qualityless impersonal Brahman. Accepting these ideas, many persons dishonor the pure Vaishnava religion. The worship of Lord Vishnu is included in the impersonalist worship of five deities, Surya, Ganesh, Shakti, Shiva, or Vishnu, as described above. And that worship includes initiation, deity worship, and the other aspects of devotion to Lord Vishnu. Sometimes it may even include the worship of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. Still, this is not pure Vaishnava religion. The pure Vaishnava religion is different from these kinds of contaminated Vaishnava religion. It is the true Vaishnava religion. Because of the defects of Kali Yuga, many people do not understand what is the pure Vaishnava religion. They think that these varieties of contaminated Vaishnava religion are the true Vaishnava religion. Yeah, so it's basically the same thing. It's just the difference is these mimamsakas and others who follow this worship of these five deities, then they will continue worshiping, you know, however long that they are, you know, able to perform the worship. and they want karma as the result. The others is because they want the impersonal Brahman. They worship them till they figure that they came to a platform of perfection. And when they come to the point where they feel very confident in themselves, then they give up the worship because they've attained to that position of those deities, or even gone beyond the deity, because qualityless is then the top, and then because of Maya, then the qualityless of Brahman has taken the various forms of this world. So then, if they have come to this kind of platform, they actually feel that they're better than the deity. They become the deity, they're better than the deity. So then at that point they give up. So this is also not pure, but it's common. It's a very common idea. So they'll worship, and here it mentions initiation, they'll go through the deity worship, so many things that'll look like Vaishnavism, but it's not, because they feel that they become God and give up the worship. And these people then can't understand the real Vaishnav. The worshippers of the Paramatma, Supersoul, wish to meet the Supersoul, desiring to enter a mystic trance and there meet the Supersoul. They engage in Kriya Yoga, Karma Yoga, or Astanga Yoga. According to these people, initiation into chanting Vishnu mantras, worship of Lord Vishnu, meditating on Lord Vishnu, and other kinds of devotional service are all various aspects of Karma Yoga. Among these people, Vaishnava religion, contaminated by fruit of work, is manifested. So for the yogis, they're also meditating upon Vishnu, and one would say that they're also devotees. But we see is actually they're not, because for them, this whole process of performing the devotional activities and that they do in the first six stages of their performance of Astanga Yoga. So so this is called Nishkam Karma Yoga. In this case, they use that aspect. But the purpose is just to become freed from the material contamination. Then when they get to the point of dhyana, meditation on Vishnu, then they meditate upon the Supersoul, but then they ultimately want to become the Supersoul. Or they want mystic siddhis from it. So it's also contaminated by fruit of work. It's not... Actually, they want a fruit. There's something they're doing it simply for themselves. It's not actually for the pleasure of the Lord. It's for their own purposes. So Vaishnavas means that they're worshipping the Lord for His pleasure. While we see these others, the Mimamsakas, the impersonalists, and the yogis, that they're interested in worshipping the Lord simply for their own purpose. They're not trying to please the Lord, other than please Him to get what they want. That's all. But it's not that it's being done for His pleasure. And that is what is their pleasure. So it's not actually service. Srimad Bhagavatam explains that the most fortunate persons are attracted to pure devotional service to the pure form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such persons engage in deity worship and the other activities of devotional service. These activities of devotional service are not subordinate aspects of Kriya Yoga, Karma Yoga, or the speculations of the impersonalists. Rather, they are aspects of pure devotional service. These activities are the pure Vaishnava religion. Srimad Bhagavatam 111 explains, learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. One should see in this way the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is not different from either the Paramatma or the impersonal Brahman, is the highest, the final manifestation of the Supreme. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is Lord Vishnu, who is supreme, supremely pure. Individual soul, spirit souls that become His followers are also pure. The activity of such pure souls is called bhakti, devotional service. Hari bhakti, devotional service to Lord Hari, is also called by the names Shuddha Vaishnava Dharma, pure Vaishnava religion, Nitya Dharma, eternal religion, Jiva Dharma, duty of individual souls, Bhagavad Dharma, religion of worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Paramartha Dharma, way to attain the final goal of life, and Paradharma, highest religion. Religions that strive to attain the Paramatma and the impersonal Brahman are all temporary religions. A material motive pushes one to seek the impersonal Brahman. Therefore, the religion of the impersonal Brahman is materially motivated and temporary. It is not eternal. The individual soul trapped in the material world is eager to escape this material bondage. To escape this material world, the soul searches for the impersonal Brahman. In this way, he takes shelter of a religion that is both temporary and materially motivated. Therefore, the religion of seeking the impersonal Brahman is not eternal. Seeking the happiness of rapt meditation, samadhi, the soul may take shelter of a religion of seeking the Paramatma. Thus, seeking a more subtle type of material pleasure, he follows a temporary religion based on a material motive. Therefore, the religion of seeking the Paramatma is not eternal. The religion of serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead is alone eternal. Because the motive, because they themselves want something for themselves, and what they want is actually temporary. Therefore, it's material, and it's materially motivated. So we can't say it's eternal religion, because you can't stay in the Brahman eternally. So that means one again will fall from there, and then whatever activities one is doing in the Brahman are given up. And then whatever one is doing before that, then again has to be taken up. So it doesn't, and it's still the, how you say, the motives are material. So these concepts of Brahman realization, Paramatma realization, these are actually concepts that come up in the material world. Generally, we think of them as spiritual concepts, but actually, they're dealing with transcendence. But they themselves are not originating from the transcendental platform. So that's what. Therefore, also you cannot call it them eternal religions. Because in the spiritual world, no one ever thinks of merging into the Brahman or Paramatma. That's just not what they do. They always serve Bhagavan. Their whole idea is to please the Lord. They have no other purpose, no material purpose. Therefore, only the Vaishnav religion of serving the Supreme Lord, that is eternal, and these other ones are temporary. Any questions on this, or we'll move on?
Did you hear the button?
Okay. Hearing these words, Lahiri Mahashai said, "Please describe to me the pure Vaishnava religion. I am advanced in years. I take shelter of your feet. Please be merciful and accept me. I have heard it said that a person previously initiated and instructed by an unworthy person should find a worthy teacher and accept initiation and instruction from him. For some days I have heard your good instructions, and now I have faith in the Vaishnava religion. Please be merciful. Teach me the Vaishnava religion, and when your teaching is concluded, initiate me and purify me." A little embarrassed, the saintly Babaji said, "Saintly brother, I will teach you as far as I am able, but I am not qualified to be an initiating spiritual master. However that may be, you should now learn about the pure Vaishnava religion." So those who have taken up, you know, are initiated by those who are not proper, those who are not on the transcendental platform. Are not representing the transcendental teachings in the parampara. These kind of persons, though one may have seemingly been initiated by them, it still is one is initiated into a material process. So then when one comes in contact with the actual transcendental process, then there is not a problem in taking initiation there. It means one does not accept many diksha gurus. But in this case, where the Diksha Guru actually is not representing the proper parampara, is not coming in that parampara, then such a person may be overstepped, and one may then take shelter of the bona fide teaching, the bona fide line. And then, so that's one aspect. So he's saying here that he wants to hear, and once he understands, then he takes initiation. And the the Babaji, Vaishnav Das, that he says is that I'll teach you as far as I am able. So this is the understanding of the preacher. Is what I understand, that much I can teach you. I can't teach you beyond that. And he's saying here, he is unqualified, you know, to perform these duties. But in any case, whatever one must hear, doesn't matter what is the qualification here of the Vaishnava Das. His point is you must hear about this Vaishnava religion. So we see from both of their statements that the siksha, or the instruction, is the most essential aspect. Like that, one should understand, hear, understand. Once one understands, and understands what one is doing, what is the process, how does it work, then one is taking initiation. This is an essential point. Is that it's not that we, out of sentiment, then we take initiation. We see here that his sentiment has changed, right? It means here, he's been absorbed in these activities, the smarta line, and, you know, but smarta line according to, you know, some Vaishnava tradition, as we mentioned before, they worship Vishnu, either from the karma point of view, or the impersonalist, or a mix, or from the yoga point of view, they all worship Vishnu. But their purpose is mundane, their goal is mundane. So then here he is, and then he's understanding that this is wrong, what he's been doing. So now in that mood, he is, you know, feeling, repenting for what is, you know, been lost here by wasting one's time. And now he's going to take shelter of the bona fide Vaishnavas and their Siddhanta. So now, at that point, we would say, many would then say, okay, so then please accept me, initiate me like that. But he's saying, no, first teach me so I know what I'm supposed to do, what's going on. Then give initiation. Like that. And so Vaishnava Das says, you know, initiation, not initiation, that's another thing, you know. But the point is yes, you must hear first about the Vaishnava religion. So this is the proper approach to accepting the spiritual master. Otherwise, then it may be sentimental, and then we may run into problem that when we do hear, then maybe we like, maybe we don't like, maybe we're able to accept, maybe we're not able to accept, then it's a problem. Because then the person is the Diksha Guru. And that is the root, you know, of our connection. So then it becomes a problem. But if one has gone through the process of siksha first, then one gets benefit, one can take from anyone siksha for those who can give guidance, who have an understanding, who can benefit us, take us in that right direction towards the proper understanding of the pure Vaishnava religion. And then the diksha is another step. Right? First one must hear. Sadhu Sangha means that we hear from sadhus, we hear from the Vaishnavas. That is the Sadhu Sangha. And we perform activities of devotional service. We practice that. Then, when those become strong, then we take initiation. This is the point that's being made here. So it's not something that one takes sentimentally, but it's actually, you know, one has to be very, very, thoughtful. One is very thoughtful and understanding in that. Mm-hmm. Anything on that?
Could it be that we could also get inspired to take initiation by reading the works of, even if you've not met the person as yet, would you get inspired?
Yes, but you're getting inspired by the instruction. That's the main thing. Means as long as it's the instruction, that's the inspiration, then, because that's the living relationship. You know, how much you can cultivate the relationship on, they smile nicely, or they lead a nice kirtan, or, you know, they patted your kid on the head, or, you know, so many ways that will attract our attention to a person. You know, that we like something about them. But what we're attracted to is not directly the instruction. And it may be because the type of instruction they give then may result in them, that because of their personality, then they do activities that we also find pleasing. you know, the physical form is pleasing, how they act is pleasing, and deal and speak and all these kind of things. But it's not necessarily, right? You know, it's not necessarily. You know, all kinds of personalities smile, all kinds of personalities sing, all kinds of personalities dress or deal or... So to see that it's the proper connection, then instruction is the main thing. That is the point here. Instruction is the main. So reading, then that's good. But then one should check to see how the interaction is. Because reading means that they, you know, put in a way so that you could understand in general. But you have to see is how they also deal with you and you with them. You know, that they're satisfied also. That's the ideal. But it must be based on instruction. Otherwise, you so many times get as they smiled. So that's why you like them, because they smiled. And then you take initiation, and then you do something wrong, and then they don't smile. And it's like, what happened? Guru Maharaj has changed, the relationship has changed. Right? He's not smiling. Like that. And this is not an uncommon thing. You know, it's not that we're taking an extreme example. This is quite a common example. You know, it's just some little thing changed. It's the difference in externals of dealing, and then we feel that everything's changed. The instructions are the same. But instructions may be pleasant and may be strong. You know, depending upon Thunderbolt Rose, depending upon the situation, the need, you know, circumstances. That's why then the time is necessary. And then one is convinced that in all these different situations that you feel convinced that things are working. You know? Does that make sense? Okay. Anything else on this? Yeah.
He was first explaining that he was hearing from him and he got faith. And then he asked if you could teach him and get initiation. Then we see in some Vedic instances, before they can get taught or before they can study, they have to take Upanayana. How is that?
That is if they're going to learn specifically the Veda. See, the transcendental knowledge is actually kind of beyond this. But in the Vedic thing is Upanayanam is connected to character. So only if you have the character for Upanayanam, then they'll consider even teaching you. Like that. Because what's being taught, if you're teaching the Veda, memorizing the Veda, the intricacies of the Veda, and all these other subjects, you're dealing with material subject matter. Though refined and, you know, the best of subject matter. So therefore it needs the best of character. But the Vaishnava religion, because of its pure nature, is going beyond the conditioned nature to the platform of the soul. Therefore, it can be spoken to someone who is interested, who is not averse, and that may awaken from within the heart the natural spiritual attractions. Then, from that automatically, the Vaishnava platform then contains all good qualities. So the more they practice, the more they take part, then we start seeing that the good qualities that are necessary for Upanayanam and that, then gradually start to manifest by the process of hearing and chanting, association, various services like this. So then the same thing is accomplished. Because in... in the Vedic system, then they take Upanayanam and then they practice. They do yagyas, they serve prasad, they do what's called purascharya viti. These different aspects. I think there's five aspects of it. So then they perform those activities, and then from that, then they'll become qualified to receive other mantras, more specific mantras, either the Pancharatrik mantras or other technical specific mantras of the Vedic. And they can do the Shraddha Yajnas and these other big Yajnas and things like that. But it's only after this. So that's like a preliminary. But the Vaishnava is that without initiation you can perform certain aspects of the Purushcharya. And the chanting of the holy name is independent. He doesn't he's not dependent upon Purushacharya like that. But for the process, because ultimately the process is you're going to work under others in the spiritual realm, then this aspect must be dealt with. So therefore the need for initiation in that. There must be that serious commitment to someone who you can deal with. Because in the spiritual realm, you're going to be dealing with people. You know, it's like, here the acharya may be present or not, depending upon the situation, because of the temporariness of the material world. But when you're in the spiritual world, the acharyas are there, and they're always going to be there. There's not going to be a moment when you're not going to be with them. So you have to be able to work under their direction. So if that's not practiced here, by surrendering to the Vaishnava, surrendering to the spiritual master, surrendering to the parampara and to the instructions and the mood of that parampara, then it's not going to work in the spiritual realm like that. Therefore, in the form of Vaidhi, all the foundational things must be given that are the kind of like underlying activities and moods of the spiritual world, how they deal there. I mean, it's the same thing. Just there's no need of rules and regulations because their word, their thoughts are pure and real. While here is this moment we think like that and the next moment we don't. You know, while here then we need the help and support of the rules to maintain the steadiness, to maintain that commitment. You know, like that. Does that make some sense? You know, so you have a big ritual, everybody knows. You know, you have of all the samskaras, the one that is the biggest hoopla made about it, and the most people hear about it, know about it, see it, are involved in it, is a marriage. Because of all the samskaras on the material platform, it's the most important, most technical. Now, if just a boy and a girl, you know, met and out in the forest, nobody knew, and then things didn't go so well, they could just part their ways and do whatever they want. Who would know? You know what? So whatever, the mind is happy today, great. If it's not happy tomorrow, then it may go somewhere else. But if thousands of people have been to the wedding, seen the wedding, know about the wedding, everything, it makes it a little harder to just walk out. Because then everybody's going to talk and this and that. And it'll be socially, if you're in a pious society, then it will create a problem for you. So therefore you'll tend to keep the mind in control and deal with it and try to make things work. On the other, as soon as the mind moves, then it's gone. Like that. Because of these social restrictions and like that. Does that make sense? So therefore, the transcendental, the Bhagavat platform, is then transformed into rules just to create steadiness, to create the mode of goodness in which the mind can be peaceful, the mind can be focused, the mind can be all these different things. Does that make some sense? Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the original spiritual master of the entire world, teaches that there are three basic truths in the Vaishnava religion. They are Sambandha, the relationship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the individual soul. 2. Abhideya, the activities in that relationship. And 3. Prayojana, the final goal, which is pure love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who understands these three truths can act properly. He is a pure Vaishnava, or a pure devotee of the Lord. Within Sambandha, there are three distinct truths. 1. The material world, or the illusory potency Maya. 2. The individual soul, or the subordinate living entity. And 3. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is one and unrivaled, the master of all powers, all attractive, the abode of all opulence and sweetness, and the only shelter of both the spiritual souls and the illusory potency. Illusory potency Maya. Although he is the only shelter of both the individual souls and the illusory potency Maya, he is always supremely independent, and his transcendental form is both sublimely handsome and eternal. The impersonal Brahman effulgence is merely a distant reflection of the splendor of his limbs. with his potency of transcendental power, Aishi Sakti, he manifests the material universes and places the individual souls within them. Then he expands to become the Supersoul. As the Supersoul, he enters the material universes. In this way, he is the Supreme Controller. When he manifests his feature of supreme opulence, he is Lord Narayana in the spiritual sky. When he manifests his feature of supreme sweetness, he is Lord Krishna Chandra, the gopi's beloved in Goloka Vrindavan. His different forms and pastimes are all limitless and eternal. No person or thing is his equal. Nothing is superior to him. All his forms and pastimes are manifested by his Parashakti, transcendental potency. Of his many different transcendental potencies, three are especially known to the individual souls. One of these potencies is called the Chit potency. Let's get back to this. So the Sambandha Abhideyam Prayojana, Lord Chaitanya explains, this is the basis of all understanding. It means all the transcendental understanding can be understood through this. So, and what the Vedas, and they're all talking about how to Krishnize material things, they're also based on these three things. So when you understand the relationship between the Lord, the living entity, and then the object that you're dealing with, then you actually understand, you have real knowledge. So one who can act on this platform, then he actually understands things as they are. So then Krishna is, he's the Lord of everything. He is the Supreme Lord, unrivaled. He is all energies and that are coming from him, all opulences. You know, the whole cosmic manifestation is coming from him. The jivas are coming from him. And he is the most attractive one. He is the most attractive, most wonderful. Of this attractive, then he describes two. Is he's describing three, is that by the Aishi Shakti, he's manifesting the material world, and as a super soul, he's entering this. So this is one manifestation, the Purusha avatars, this is one manifestation. Then when he's manifesting his mood of opulence, this is Narayana in Vaikuntha. Then when he's manifesting the mood of sweetness, and this is Krishna in Vrindavan. It's very dear to the Brajavasis, and especially dear to the gopis. So then, these are the three, you know, what we could say, three very general main aspects of how Krishna manifests his rasa, or his interaction with the living entities. So this describes Krishna. You know, his position, like that. Is that understood? Simple. Okay. All his forms and pastimes are manifested by his Parashakti, transcendental potency. Of his many different transcendental potencies, three are especially known to the individual souls. One of these potencies, here, they are especially known to the individual souls. Means this is specifically for our benefit that it's broken up like this. Because for Krishna, it's all together. You know, it's just like you take a sabji. Then, you know, you have the cauliflower, you have the potatoes, and you have the sauce. Like this. So, we can see it like that. And, you know, for the cook, there are those three things, but it's together, it's one thing. You can say this is, but it's actually one thing. So, on the transcendental platform, I mean, in Krishna's view, and for those who have entered into the Nitya Lila, then these three aren't separated so much like this. They're seen as together, as the Parashakti. But for the individual living soul to free himself from the material world, to become re-established again in devotional service, then this view is important to be able to analyze the material world and to see how we've gotten into it, why we're here, how to get out of here, how to give up that attachment, how to become attached to Krishna. These things are important. Therefore, we see they're always discussed. One of these potencies is called the Chit potency. Employing this potency, the Supreme Personality of Godhead enjoys all his transcendental pastimes. Another of these potencies is called the Jiva potency, or the marginal potency. By this potency, limitless individual souls are manifested and maintained. The third potency is called the Maya potency. By this potency, all material things, material time, and material activities are manifested. Right, so this is your internal potency, your external potency, and the marginal potency, the jivas. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has a relationship with the individual spirit souls. Material energy and the individual spirit souls both have relationships with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead and the individual souls both have relationships with the material energy. These different relationships are called sambandha. Sambandha is understood when one understands these different relationships. Without first understanding these relationships, it is not possible for anyone to become a pure Vaishnava. So I guess this is a reason for understanding these things. Because otherwise, how will you understand? We say we're a devotee of Krishna, but he has all these potencies. And so if one doesn't understand these things, then how will one will come to this platform? Like this. It's one thing if one understands, means realizes that whatever is there, he sees it as Krishna's energy, engages it in his service, and so therefore is not necessarily distinguishing. It's all Krishna's, it's all for Krishna. But that's fine if one is automatically on that platform. But if one is not automatically on that platform, then one needs to be able to discriminate these. Because if one has already gotten to the realized state of this platform, then that's fine, because then one only sees the transcendental. So then the distinction between them is not so important. But if one is not on the transcendental platform, then it's very necessary for helping free us from the material contamination. Otherwise, then it will just be sentiment. We'll think about Krishna, but then the things of this world will engage in our own purposes, you know, which is a very common thing. Lahiri Mahashaya said, "From the Vaishnavas themselves, I have heard that Vaishnavas surrender to their emotions, and therefore they have no need for knowledge." What kind of statement is that? I myself, up to this time, have chanted the holy names of Lord Hari only to attain a certain feeling. I did not strive to understand any relationships. So here he's presenting especially the Gaudiya Vaishnava, but all the Vaishnava, the pure Vaishnava religion, the emphasis is on the rasa, how to develop that rasa with the Lord. So then many will take it that it's just emotional. Bhakti is emotional. So then whatever emotion pops up, then they feel that this is bhakti. And even if it's connected to Krishna, they adjust it with Krishna, then there's some truth. It's connected to the process. But the difficulty comes is that they don't strive for knowledge. When they say there's no need for knowledge, that then such a person is not representing actually the pure Vaishnava religion. Because if you're conditioned, you have to understand the relationships. Because you're just dealing in emotions means that. Emotion means relationship. Like that. Well, if one is simply trying to deal in the realm of relationships, one doesn't understand them, it won't work very nicely. Yeah. And then when you say there's no need, oh yeah. Then if you are advanced, then you understand the need for the conditioned soul to have this understanding. So from either side, for the liberated or the non-liberated, ones who are on the path of pure devotion, or practicing, or are perfected in pure devotion, understand the need for this sambandha jnana, this understanding of relationships. Otherwise, that's what the whole rasa means, what it is the relationship. So this must be understood. Here is rules and regulations, but when you get to the transcendental platform, then there's so many subtleties of relationships. You have the sthayi bhav, vyavichari bhav, the anubhav, and vibhav. all these different aspects are there, and these are something that one understands. It's not knowledge. It means it's not just theory, it's actual practical. You can understand by the mood, the flavor, the situation, which aspects are manifesting, and then in that way you know how to best please Krishna in that situation. So we see that the first quarter of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu then deals with the whole process of coming from Shraddha up to Prema. But then three quarters of the book deals with transcendental rasa. What is, you know, how Krishna creates the desire to serve Him and worship Him, love Him. What are these relationships you can have based on that attraction? What are those attachments? And then what is the nature of the service rendered by those persons with those particular transcendental attractions and attachments? And what are things to watch out for? What is improper? What is bogus? What is improper mixes of this? So that's all explained. So it's a huge science. So to say there's no need of knowledge like that, then means they're not understanding. They're taking their mundane emotions as spiritual. Just because they thought it, it's important. And another aspect that he says here is that he was doing it to attain a certain feeling. So he was simply worshipping Krishna, chanting his holy name, simply for his own purposes. Like that. But because it's not coming in the parampara, because they don't have this knowledge, they never actually move in the proper direction. They don't really move in the proper direction. Well, even if one takes up under the direction of the bona fide line of instruction, the bona fide acharyas, then under the direction of the bona fide acharya, then one will find that one will gradually progress and one will give up that one's own particular personal motive. And one's desire will be to please Krishna. But here it's just they get a certain feeling. By chanting, it situates them nicely. They get some benefit. But they're trying to enjoy the Lord. So the controlling and enjoying mood, the Purusha Bhav, is still manifest. While the pure Vaishnava religion is trying to remove that Purusha Bhav from the heart of the living entity and establish them on the platform of pure devotion, where Krishna's pleasure is actually what we're trying to attain, not our own. It means our pleasure will come when Krishna is pleased. That is the definition. Yes?
That feeling that we get when we chant, is that transcendental or is it material?
It'll be transcendental. But the thing is there's also the material going on at the same time. Not coming from that, but it's also kind of going on. You know? Is that other things are still in the background. So that may be there, and as long as you're in it, then you're ecstatic and doing it and all that. But because of the taste for other things, because of the conditioning, one may not be able to continue that chanting and that situation for long. You know, some minutes, some hours. And then after that, one has to go off and, you know, talk with your friends and, you know, wow, I had a great kirtan. Yeah, you know, just go off and, you know, whatever it is, get into whatever needs you need, what relationships, eating, sleeping, you know, family life, you know, economic development, all these different things come back in. So because there's so many things that make you forget Krishna, therefore that aspect of always remembering. So that's why it's important, the aspect of the sadhana bhakti, along with it, this knowledge. So practices of sadhana are done in knowledge. Then that will clear away all those anarthas, or those unwanted things that distract us from Krishna. Then if you're in the pure state, you go into a nice kirtan and you have those feelings will never go away. They'll just increase and increase and increase, because there's nothing to distract you. Therefore, then the advanced, so they can just sit there and do kirtan all day, they're happy. There's no other life for them like that, other than giving it to others. But it's the same, kirtan, shravanam, kirtanam. So that is there. So it's not that it's not transcendental, it's that if it's coming in the proper parampara. Lahiri Babu is coming not from the proper parampara, he's coming from the this karmakandi approach, you know, this Mimamsaka approach to worshipping Vishnu. So it's not actually a bona fide line. It's not true Vaishnavism. But one who has come in, yes, so his feelings and all that will not really be proper. It may be very much the mode of goodness or other things. But here is coming from, you know, the transcendental sound has been heard from the lips of the pure Vaishnavas. So even if one is joking and this and that, you get spiritual benefit. But when you've heard from those who are not devotees the holy name, then that name doesn't increase the transcendence. It doesn't have transcendence in it. Like that. Does that make some sense?
Mm-hmm. One thought I had on this point of emotion is that the materialists sometimes present the Bhagavad Gita as presenting different paths. The karma yoga path, then there's the dhyana yoga path, and there's a bhakti yoga path, and they lead to the goal, not understanding that karma, dhyana, bhakti are all part of the same process.
Yeah.
And so dhyana is part of the emotional bhakti, the feeling that one has.
This is what you get, is the sahajas, that's their thing, it's just emotion, forget the jnana is not so important. And generally, if you check, then they take this to a very deep platform, because then they have their nice emotional relationships with their girlfriends. You know, so then, like this, then emotions are there and not a whole lot of philosophy. You know? Or those who are into philosophy then just emphasize this emotional aspect. But the rules and regulations they don't get into. Though they will quote that, you know, you must have the taste, you must this. They quote all kinds of raganuga stuff from the scriptures and say, this must be done. So technically that's also called vaidhi. Though the topic matter of their vaidhi is raganuga or ragatmika. But it still is vaidhi. It's just their own path of vaidhi rather than Rupa Goswami's path of vaidhi. Like that. Though it appears that it's something else. It appears that it's something else, but it's not. Right.
You've mentioned Mimamsa just now, and in the last class as well, as being Karmakanda. I thought it meant Vedanta. Does it mean both things, or...?
See, is in... Mimamsa means basically is like Vedic philosophy. There's these expansions. So you have Karma Mimamsa, Purva Mimamsa, you know, there's Uttara Mimamsa, all these others, you know, the Vaishyasika and Patanjali, Gotama, all these different things. These are all Mimamsa. These are philosophies that are taken from the... So then, basically they fit into two main categories of the Mimamsa. You have the impersonalist, the Uttara Mimamsa. And you have the other five are all karma. Like that. So then they're not actually pure bhakti. So both of those have been dealt with, and also Patanjali, which is yoga. So that he's described. Now, when you get into Uttara Mimamsa, then it's actually the real form of it is Vyasadeva. And the real form of that then is Vaishnava. Like that. And then that comes in four sampradayas. So even though Shankara is also Uttara Mimamsa, but because of its nature, the impersonal and the Maya body, it's not actually... comes into the platform of real transcendental knowledge. It's dealing with transcendence, but the approach is not transcendental because it's materially motivated. You want out of the material world. That's your reason for dealing with it. Once you're out, you don't care for it. You know, you become it like this. So how can you, you know, it's your worship, your understanding, and you become that understanding, you become that worship. You know, so it's temporary. One can't stay in that position. So this is a difficulty of this. Yeah. So therefore, it doesn't really count in there. Therefore, Denle means for those who are dealing with Vedic knowledge, they call it Mimamsa, the category of knowledge. For those who are dealing with transcendence, they call it Vedanta. Like that. And of the Vedantists, then there's the impersonalist, and then there's the Vaishnavas. So the impersonalist has also been, I mean, has already been written off that it's also material. So therefore, only the Vaishnava Vedantists, they are actually what you call pure Vaishnavism on the actual eternal transcendental platform. See, I've heard that Vaishnavas surrender to their emotions. So that means whatever the mind dreams up, they go with. Whatever it thinks of. And this, so they do all kinds of fun things.
Sounds quite new-age.
Yeah, it's definitely it's new. Yeah, that's a very good point. So new age is... Yeah, it's old age. Old age, yeah. I mean, it's there's nothing new in this world. People think it's something new. But it's just they found it. You know? You walk along in the street and you find some sugar cane that someone else has already chewed. It's new. It's a new piece of chewed sugar cane for you, right? But it's been lying there in the street since time immemorial, you know, and being chewed. So there's nothing new. There's nothing that some of the karmis can come up with, and especially the non-Vedic. I mean, the Vedic already has unlimited already stuff in it. So the non-Vedic is same thing in the unsystematic, unsophisticated, or less sophisticated fashion, or so-called the sophistication of the you know how you say, Bhaktisiddhanta calls it. You know the sophistry of the barbarians. You know, it's like. You know, they have their special glass to put their alcoholic drinks in, and then the way they'll hold it, and the way they'll sniff it, and drink, sip it, and you know, it seems very sophisticated. But you know, they're just very sophisticated. They're just sophisticated pigs. That's all. You know, pigs are very expert at distinguishing and eating all kinds of unedibles. You know, like that. And so then, it's just a taking it to a more sophisticated way, you know. You know, they're just, their oinks are a little bit more sophisticated. And they give names to all the different kinds of, you know, rotten substances, like that. So it's like... Yeah, so it's not real. You know, it's just they've made it up. That's all. Somebody, you know, does it, and others will consider it uncultured. Right? There's this funny little strip of water in Europe, and on one side, who's on one side will say the other side is barbarians, and if you go to the other side, they'll say the ones on this side don't know what they're talking about. And then you go another place, and they'll say neither of them know what they're talking about. They'll say that they're not sophisticated. You know, so this is the problem. It's monodharma. They've brought it. It's their own mind. So this is the point here: surrender to their own emotions, like that. But here it's coming within kind of a Vedic pure purview. So it's actually more dangerous because then it looks the same. While at least the non-Vedic, it's obvious that it's different if you study it a little bit. You know, it's like, therefore, they'll think, New Age is different than there's Vedic. No, the New Age has been there for years. It's called Sahajism. You know, like that. You know, just your emotions and what feels good you do. And this, you know, it's the same thing.
So, Maharaj, you could say that we require knowledge to distinguish if the emotion is bona fide or not.
Yeah, it means you have to direct emotion. Just because you have it doesn't mean it's good. You know, It means you have to be able to direct it according to who it is. Right? Just like you have an emotion, you want to embrace somebody. You know, but if you have a, you know, a six-month-old baby and you embrace him like an adult, you might kill them. Right? So you have to have knowledge of the person that you're having a relationship with. But the sahaja idea is you don't have to have knowledge, it just naturally springs. Like this. But, you know, it's...
Be what you are.
Yeah, be what you are. Be true to yourself. And, you know, all these different things, you know. But, so, it's not real. You still have to have the knowledge. How you express the same emotion to a small child, to a medium child, to a teenager, to an adult, to an intimate friend, to an acquaintance, you know, to a general audience or to a closed audience, it'll all be different. You know, it'll all be different. So that means you have to have knowledge of what's going on. So one may, due to previous karma, have some ability in a certain area that just springs from the heart. But that's because you've done before and you have that knowledge from before. So now it's just the habit is coming through. But it's only specific. You can only apply it in a limited area. Well, if you have knowledge, then you can apply it in so many areas. And so that's the whole Vaishnava science, is that at every moment, every situation, whatever you're dealing with, you can connect it all to Krishna, because you understand the science of relationship. You understand the science of process, the understanding of the process, I mean, of the goal, how to work, and then see everything in connection. Then all activities become perfect. And then the real spontaneity is when one's natural love for Krishna awakens. Like that. But that's distinguished from mundane emotion, because when that awakens for Krishna in actuality, then there can be no attractions in this world. Now, the beginning stages, there can be. It'll be a mix. But when it actually gets to something serious, there isn't. Now, to be advanced, then there can't be any attachments to this world. Now, there may not be much attachments to the spiritual world, but there can be zero attachments here. Like that. But someone who has, you know, decent attachments here, then can only have a partial attachment to the spiritual world. And they're limited by they're held back or weighted down by those attachments to this material world. Does that make sense? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Maharaj, you're explaining how Vaishnavas are following Pancharatri.
Vedanta is transcendental. So that's describing. Yeah, means. Let's say. The Vedanta is the philosophy of what the whole process is based on. Understanding basically this knowledge, sambandhigyan. Means you have chit ishwara, or means the soul, chit, the material world, achit, and Krishna, ishwara. Then you have that's sambandha. Then you have bhakti, you know, a devotional service, the process, and prema is the goal. So when you understand these five, then that is what's explained in the Vedanta. So Pancharatra then explains that, but the main thing that we're taking from there is the application of that philosophy into our life practically. You know, then how someone who lives this philosophy, how do they act? So then they follow it like this. So the Pancharatra regulates the lifestyle so that the mind is established in goodness, so that we can come as close to as possible to or give us the best chance for coming to the platform of pure goodness. So it's Pancharatra is then the Bhagavat philosophy or the Vedanta philosophy in the form of ritual. But all those rituals are connected to the Lord. Then you know, how you say, expand it more, then you get the Varnashram, which then can be connected to that. Though Varnashram is generic, it's not specifically on Krishna. Though it's supposed to be, but it's written in such a way that anybody can use it. So when you extract only those portions that are important for worshipping Krishna, and connect that to the Pancharatrik and then the Vedanta, then it becomes a very powerful process. Like that. Then it becomes very powerful. Otherwise, it's pious, it's good, but it's not, it doesn't give transcendent spiritual perfection.
So Pancharatrik is only an aspect of Vedanta?
Pancharatra is like the application of Vedanta. Once you know you are Krishna's servant, so how am I supposed to serve? So then Pancharatra gives us a process how we in a conditioned state can serve the Lord. Well, the Bhagavad is just you always hear and chant and glorify the Lord and remember Him. That's all. So someone who is on that the Bhagavad platform, I mean on the Brahmabhuta platform, maybe will take it up in a moment. Like we see Sukadeva Goswami and the four Kumaras, they were on that platform. So when they heard about it, from that moment they were pure devotees. But if we're conditioned, we have to be over that conditioning. So Pancharatra teaches us how to do that. Because every activity of Pancharatra is directed at the Lord. Therefore it's called Ekaina. So it's like Bhagavat, but it's in the form of rules and regulations. Is that... And so Bhagavad is its life, but its form is that of rules. Does that make some sense? Mataji?
I'm telling you, in spontaneous life for Krishna, are we doing everything for ourselves?
It means how, if you want to dig deep enough, then basically, but because doing it for ourselves is connected to Krishna, therefore, it's considered progressive, like that. Because means it's not, the conditioned soul will be conditioned to doing things for themselves. Means there's so many definitions of what is ourself. There's the body as ourself. There's the mind as ourself. There's the intelligence as ourself. There's the ego is the self, there's the mood that I am the controller, enjoyer is the self, then there's the actual soul, who is the servant of Krishna. So that's the real self. So in the conditioned state, then one is going to be affected by these lower stages. And unless one is on the Brahmabhuta platform with contact with Krishna, even the subtlest of them, or I am the controller and enjoyer, will still remain. So even though a impersonalist is on the Brahmabhuta platform, they still have this mood, I am the controller and enjoyer. So that is there. The Purusha mood is there until one becomes, basically until one becomes completely freed of, you know, material contamination. But because it's in connection with Krishna, it goes into the background. Your purpose is to please Krishna. Though unconsciously, by habit, conditioning, one may be, you know, wanting to please oneself. But it's not the conscious purpose. Does that make sense?
It's your desire.
Yeah. I mean, so what is the purpose of your desire? Though habit may be, you know, so many things, but your desires is the most important. Right? Can you say something? And then this gets into a whole other section. Okay. Any other questions? Otherwise, I'll end here.
What about the fact that chanting brings knowledge? Does this knowledge supplement that knowledge, or how does it work?
Means by the chanting, when one has heard the holy name from the proper source, then that chanting gives knowledge. It's the whole devotional process gives knowledge. And that if you perform things for Krishna, you know, in detachment, then it automatically creates knowledge and detachment. Like that. So that is it's part of the process.
Also, the holy name is a person, and so it's maybe not as impersonal as we might expect. The chanting gives knowledge that's just going to appear within us, but the holy name may arrange, okay, you're chanting, here's a devotee who's going to explain things to you nicely, or here's a test that's going to frustrate you, that you're going to go looking for knowledge. And we may think it's something separate from the holy name, but it is the holy name who has made those arrangements.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktavrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.
Means you can establish a siksha relationship. You can't establish a siksha relationship.
But I mean, if a devotee, say, you feel that's what inspires you, and he feels really connected to that type of explanation.
But even in diksha, it's the instruction that is inspiring. But you don't call that diksha. It means there's the form of the diksha, then maybe the life of the diksha, which is instruction. So by that definition, you can call it diksha, but it's still technically called siksha. One has to be able to distinguish. If one can't distinguish, then one doesn't have the proper knowledge, and he says, so you can't become a pure Vaishnava unless you make these distinctions. You have to be able to distinguish. Just like without proper achar, you can't become a pure Vaishnava. So without proper knowledge, without proper achar, without proper motivations or goals, you can't become. Otherwise, it's just what you feel like. You know, you are doing this, and so then therefore that's nice, and this is what you want, so that's not. That won't work.
So it means the person who is so just being inspired by the anacharya already, as kind as his instruction is written for. So now he has to approach a person who is in line with that knowledge, and he cannot make it,
and get the ritual of diksha from them, and that will connect them in the diksha pranali through that person. So that is your connection to the parampara, the diksha pranali. The siksha pranali, then you have with that person, and you, because they're coming in that line of siksha, and you also have with those acharyas. We read Nectar Devotion, we have a relationship with Rupa Goswami. But we approach through Srila Prabhupada. Therefore, it increases our relationship with Prabhupada, it increases our relationship with Rupa Goswami. There's no bar of time and place for siksha, but they have to be able to distinguish that when it's said that diksha means transcendental knowledge, means the whole purpose of diksha is to give transcendental knowledge. But it doesn't mean that the ritual of diksha is accomplished for the conditioned soul purely by siksha. There must be that surrender, there must be that commitment, there must be that acceptance. then that part of it is done for the conditioned soul. If you're not, if you're on the transcendental platform, yes, you could say that there is some connection. But you will see that they, all these transcendental people surrender to somebody. You don't hear of somebody with no guru. Doesn't matter how transcendental they are. You know, Narad Muni is born with a spiritual body. Brahma is not born with a spiritual body, but Brahma is his guru. Like that. Krishna, he is God. He is the guru. But he always accepts the guru. So this principle is always there. They never, nobody sidesteps it. You know, nobody sidesteps. You want to go through. You know, because most pleasing, you read, you know, how you say, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's books. And then you want to have a direct relationship with him. That's nice. If you're trying to please yourself, and if you're trying to please him, he's happier that you are the servant of his servant. Like that. Because his direct persons were there and he accepted them when he was present. And then who's next in the line? You know, and then the next, and then the next. You know, what would you think of the grandchild who wants to sidestep his father and have a direct relationship? No, the relationship with the grandson is more sweet than the relationship with the son. You know, though for the grandson, he may think it's, you know, a good thing. But if he actually understands rasa, he'll understand being a grandson is more nice than being a son. So it's just out of the material concept of time and space that we feel, unless we're right there rendering direct service, and the relationship is direct, therefore we're not going to get any taste out of it. But the transcendental platform is even though the service may be direct, the relationship's not direct. We are servant of the servant of the servant. No, they drink so much there. I think that will keep me going all night. So that aspect is not appreciated by the neophyte. Like this. I don't think this is a problem so much of the Madhyama. These are generally Kanista. These are generally neophyte misconceptions. You know, just like one may say, but it's just like Prabhupada makes in the purport, I think the second canto, that the impersonal and the meditation on the super soul, these concepts are coming from the material world. They're not coming from, they don't originate in the spiritual world. They may be about different aspects of transcendence of Krishna, but they originate in the material world. They don't originate in the spiritual world. No one cares about these forms of understanding and worship. It's purely a concept of the material world. So we may have our ideas, but you know, that's the thing, is we have ours, and then the acharyas have, you know, speak the reality. So we always have to be very, very careful. It's selfish.
They may have the best intentions of the world, if you don't follow the process, it's just...
Yeah. Well, they say, you know, well, you know, people aren't qualified. But then if we were qualified, we wouldn't have any problem with it.
Right.
Dhruva Maharaj wasn't worried that, well, you know, my mother, you know, she's lamenting because she's a rival queen and she's been sidelined. And because of that, she's, you know, stays in her room and is feeling very, you know, down and all that. And, you know, of course she did tell me to go, you know, look for God, but she didn't know who God was or where he was or anything about him. So, you know, she's not very advanced. So, you know, why should I worry about her? No, it's that she started him on that path, and therefore he became perfect, and he came in contact by that, following that instruction, then that sincerity, then he got association of Narad Muni. And then by practicing that, then everything became perfect. So then it was a nice thing. He didn't consider, well, you know, they're not Nityasiddha, this, that, whatever.
Instruction is clear.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, main thing is someone will give you the instruction. It's like the postman, he didn't write the letter. You know, but what do you care? That's why he gives all these simple examples so that we can apply them. But the problem is we become so sophisticated and complex that these simple examples don't work for us. Simple definitions of what is.
Even if a postman goes away, picks his job, the message still is there.
Yeah, you got the letter.
It wasn't delivered.
You know, he didn't come back and take it away and take it with him. No, it's there. And then, of course, then it has to be replaced with a new postman.
Right.
But it's not that the old postman you didn't get benefit from. So these are all, it's just problems of the world. I mean, it's difficulty, it's not ideal, it's not best. You know, it's always best you get one form of transport that, you know, very nicely and quickly and easily takes you to the destination. But if someone's determined, then they can take two or three and change, get on this bus, that bus, this car, that plane, that train, and they'll get there. Easiest is you just take one and it goes bus. That's always the best. But if not, then it'll work. It's not ideal. But it's the impersonal ideas that, you know, so many gurus have gone, therefore let's get rid of gurus. That's the impersonal idea, is that I tried so much dealing with my emotions and pleasing my emotions and those needs, it didn't work, so therefore let me get rid of all that. So my prayojana is no relationships. But it's impersonal. Otherwise, I mean, how many people that go on, relationships happen, and, you know, people, you know, in this world die and people go on nicely with material relationships. They repose it somewhere else. They are benefited by what someone gave them. Your father dies. Does that mean that when he dies, he cheated me, he went away? What is this? What nonsense is this? And reject? No. Whatever he could do for however long, and that was better than nothing. It started this, it got it going, they did their best. So therefore, it's nice. But this takes gratefulness. It takes humility. It is. Generally not at all. Generally not at all.
Yeah. You know? And you know, it's part of the culture. You're always grateful. Anyway, even a simple school teacher, they are grateful to them.
Yeah. No, you see. I remember we used to have a Sanskrit teacher from Navadvip. And when he would come down, one day I was coming back from Navadvip, and he came down to the boat. I think coming to Mayapur. All the people, the guys that row the boats and other people were coming and this and that, they're all calling him Master Messiah, calling him teacher. You know? Because he's a teacher, they've gained something from him, or they know him as a teacher, so he's respected in that way. It's just always like that. You know, even the guy who teaches them how to drive a car, the driving guru, anytime they see the person, they'll offer their respects. I've seen it myself. I've been in the car. They drive along. They suddenly see the guru on the side of the road. Stop the car. They get out, go over to him, you know, touch his feet, you know, say, how are you, this, that. Come back, get in the car and go. And he said, who is that? He says, oh, he's my driving guru. He taught me how to drive. You know, so they're...
Yeah, it's true. It's good because then when you accept the real thing and it comes to the relationship with the guru, then you are really very grateful.
Yeah.
You never lose respect, no matter what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the problem of the Western culture.
Yeah.
Respect, you start by father and mother, and then it goes.
Yeah, so it's like they cheated me, right? Not that, and it's never our fault. You know, it's never that, well, you know, you by how you dealt in the past, then you would be in a situation where you'd end up with those problems. You know, But that's not part of the sin. I was cheated. He cheated me. I put my faith there and he, you know, but they did their best. They're a person, they're an individual. They did how much they can, you know. It's like you had your own idea of what was perfection, you know.
Nothing happens to you by chance. It's not applied anymore in that case. No. Could not be like that.
No, because we can never be less than you know, best. So therefore, it can't be that because we're not such a great disciple, therefore we had difficulty like this. But that's it. We're in the material world, we're in Kali Yuga, what do you want? It's so rare to come in contact with bona fide, you know. Bogus is unlimited. Then those who are attempting for the bona fide, then that is glorious. You know, someone will help you, you know, how much they can. Okay, we have to. Okay.